A busy Thursday chatting it up with you on June 27th, 2024, right here on Connecticut Today. We looked at a controversial move at the state capitol to possibly change the way the state's motor vehicle property tax is calculated. Southern Connecticut State University political science professor Dr. Tess Marchant Shapiro and Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar in residence Dr. Gary Rose both dropped by to preview the first presidential debate of the 2024 election cycle. And finally, we welcomed Only in Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi to stop by for his weekly update. Yeah, debate, another debate, and we're going to debate, and everybody's going to be happy because we're going to debate. All right, we'll get to that in a minute. A lot coming up on the debate, couple of preview guests to talk about that. But first, I want to elaborate on something that kind of caught me off guard yesterday, and it caught a lot of people off guard. And I posted this story on some of my social media feeds, and everybody's like, wait a minute, what? Now get ready. And I'm going to play you a report from our weekend host, Mike Cerulli. Of course, the Mike Cerulli Show every Saturday, 10 to 1, right here on WICC. I'm going to play you something that aired on News 8. With Mike Cerulli, that is, you know, not the job Mike did is confusing, but again, we're getting this confusing stuff from the General Assembly. And on top of that, this is yet another example. Now, some people, you know, the Democrats are saying, well, this is not such a big deal, and the Republicans are. It doesn't matter whether it's a big deal or not. This happened not at the last minute. In the regular session, this happened at a, you know, special session yesterday, which started yesterday. It's going to end today. And there are a lot of people on, you know, primarily the Republican side of the aisle and, you know, people in the press that cover the General Assembly in the state saying, hey, wait a minute, where did this Aquarian water sale come from? Which, again, might end up costing people money. And now you know what this is? Get this one. There, some of you, not all of you, but it's certainly going to be some of you, depending on your city and town, and depending upon what vehicle you drive, your car taxes might go up. Now, only in Connecticut do we bitch and moan and constantly whine and have legislators who say, yeah, you know, we got to do something different about the car tax, but in the meantime, we're going to raise people's car taxes. You cannot script this stuff. Now, the majority in Hartford, the Democrats on their side of the aisle saying, well, this is just a fix. And yeah, well, some people's car taxes or vehicle taxes, they may go up, but for some people it won't. Here's my point. Why are we raising car taxes on anybody? Why are we doing that? When at the same time we go through the same rigmarole every year, let's get rid of the car tax, let's come up with an idea. I thought they were going to let two or three municipalities experiment with something. That's what I was told was going to happen. And again, you know, guess what? It didn't happen. Now, let me give you the summaries on this from two different sources. But my God, you can't, folks, you can't script this. You can't script this. Now, this is from Hudson Kamphausen, his story, and I'll play you Mike Cerulli's piece coming up in just a bit, because if you don't watch a lot of TV news and you don't really follow a lot of the state capitol news, maybe some of you, not all of you, would have, you know, seen your upcoming car tax bill or maybe in a year or so saying, hey, why is this not the figure it should be? So pay attention, because here we go. And I want to spell this out for you, because you know you may be looking, not all of you, but you may be looking, maybe you and you over there, you may be looking at an increase in your vehicle taxes. Again, from the Connecticut News Junkie, which does the best job of explaining this, car taxes would be assessed differently and at a different starting rate after the state Senate passed an omnibus bill that included language to fix a 2022 law during its special session on Wednesday. The House is supposed to vote on that today. A big part of the omnibus bill, Senate Bill 501, containing numerous legislative provisions, the Senate voted to, now pay attention here, I want you to know this. The Senate voted to alter parts of a state statute that will go into effect in October if the House doesn't change it today. So if the House doesn't change it today and it's approved on a majority vote, which it likely will be, pay attention now, because your car, your truck, your minivan assessment may go up. The statute put in place fixed a depreciation schedule for assessing car taxes that began with 80% of the manufacturer's suggested retail price, which would be assessed at 70%. The tax would now be assessed at a depreciating rate beginning with, now here's the rub, it would begin with 85% of the MSRP and then decrease by 5% a year. Effectively, cars would be taxed a little over 50% of their value to begin with. It's been said that the change would put even more strain on local taxpayers, especially as some residents choose to register their cars in other states. State Senate President Democrat Martin Looney, New Haven, says that was not the case. He said, quote, well, that's certainly not true, because the rates, and now this is the Democratic comeback on this, the rates are set by the municipalities. The municipalities decide on what that would be. It's up to the town to decide how much to tax. Well, of course, Senator, the towns have their own mill rate. Republicans argue the change is effectively a tax increase, with Senator Ryan Fazio, Republican Greenwich, on this show yesterday, saying that he thinks leaving the number at 80% shows the state is moving in the right direction. But they're not leaving it at 80%. They're changing it to start on the high end at 85%. Fazio saying, quote, we all acknowledge that of the property taxes and the taxes we pay in this state, the car tax makes the least sense. Fazio added he highlighted the individuals that are registering their cars in other states to escape the tax, and said the practice by Connecticut residents puts even more strain on those who do pay their taxes. Fazio saying, quite simply, the legislation raises taxes on Connecticut residents. And you can say it doesn't if you're starting with an 85% evaluation instead of 80%. State Senator Norm Needleman, Democrat from Essex, who also serves as his town's first selectman, said the increase is not a, come on, stop this, it's not a definitive raising of taxes. He said that there will be, quote, some winners and some losers. That's what they think of you and I at the state capitol. That's what the majority thinks. That cake, let them have it needed too. There'll be some people paying less taxes on their autos and some people paying more taxes. Martin Looney said, absolutely, it's not a tax increase. It leaves it, as always, up to the towns to make a decision on what the mill rates can apply. So listen to what's going on here. You have Democrats, and they're admitting it here. Yeah, well, some may pay more taxes. It's a few more dollars. You can afford it. Now, of course, the municipalities set their mill rates, senators. We know that. But again, the fact of the matter is, and they even admit it, some people, now who knows how many, but some people are going to see a tax increase. Because the tax would now be assessed at a depreciating rate starting with 85% of the MSRP, not 80 or 70. So there you go. They do this all the time. Folks, I'm telling you, they do this all the time. They play funny business with the budget at the end of the regular session, and they did this yesterday, right? We were told for 2 or 3 weeks, the special session's not really going to be much. We don't want to even do an environmental bill in the session. We're not going to do this or that. We were told by people on both sides of the aisle, hey, don't worry about it. We're just dotting the I's and crossing the T's here. Well, you did more than that. You're trying to pull a backroom deal here that's now out in the open regarding the possible sale of Aquarian Water. Now, that may be a good idea or a bad idea, the sale, but why is it being done now? You even talked to members of the General Assembly like I've been doing the past couple of days. Where did this come from? Well, the press will figure that out. Not wanting to throw some of their buddies, some of their sweethearts and sirs across the aisle under the bus, huh? Yeah. And now this whole thing, oh, by the way, this is supposed to be a special session not to really do anything, but we're going to raise the assessment value from 70 or 80% to 85%. Do they think we're that dumb? Well, we might be, because a lot of you folks end up electing the same people year after year after year. Our buddy, our pal, Mike Cerulli from News 8. He hosts the Mike Cerulli Show every Saturday, 10 to 1, right here on WICC. Mike was at the Capitol reporting on News 8 last night. I believe 6 and 11 this ran for some of this craziness. You're going to hear Mike talk to Martin Looney in this and our buddy, our pal, Steve Harding.
One thing that seems to transcend partisan politics is a universal dislike of Connecticut's car tax. But even with bipartisan agreement that the car tax is unfair, a package of changes to the tax was met with opposition from Republicans who say those changes amount to a tax hike.
Here we have a bill today that's going to increase those assessments by 5%. We're voting to increase motor vehicle taxes here today.
5 percentage points. That's how much the state Senate raised car tax assessments in an omnibus bill passed in a special session on Wednesday. Republicans say the whole thing will net out to a tax increase. The Democratic Senate president pushed back hard.
Well, that's certainly not true because the rates are set by the municipalities. Municipalities decide what it would be. It would be that 85% occurs to the 85% of the MSRP, the value on the car. It's up to the town to decide how much to tax.
The raise in the car tax assessment rate would be accompanied by a planned shift in how cars are valued for the purposes of taxation. Assessors will move from using Blue Book values, which fluctuated during the pandemic-era used car market, to using MSRP values tied to a standardized depreciation schedule. Democrats say that will make the car tax more predictable and possibly lower for some, but the question still remains, will the average taxpayer see a higher bill?
I think it depends on the municipality, how they want to set the mill rates.
So does that mean there could be some taxpayers who end up paying more?
I mean, it is in fact true that there may be some. There may be some that will have a lower net bill.
Ultimately, whether or not you pay more or less under the new valuation and assessment scheme will likely depend on how your town chooses to set its motor vehicle mill rate. Still, while Democrats say the car tax will be simplified and some may end up paying less, Republicans maintain that taxpayers are in for an increase across the board.
You can't argue the fact that we're increasing the assessment by 5%. And how you can't say that's going to increase taxes, I think it's illogical to say that. I think you have to say it is going to.
So the bottom line here is the Republican Party in Connecticut says don't raise taxes for anybody. This is not necessary, despite your funky math. And the Democrats say, you may pay a little more tax, you may not. It's up to the cities and towns, I swear. This is like an ongoing prostate exam that never ends. All right, debate, 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 and more debate. Oh, man. Do you have your snacks out? Do you have your munchies on top? What's your preferred debate snack? Tortilla chips? Little bean dip, maybe? A little sour cream? How about that? Pigs in a blanket? You like those little suckers? Hot dogs and bacon? Peanuts? Just your regular old potato chips? What? And as far as a beverage, just water? Or will you be having, you know, will you be taking shots of tequila, bourbon, downing your favorite beer as the night gets more and more ridiculous? Hopefully it won't. Hopefully we have a decent decent exchange on ideas, but we shall see. Joining us right now to talk about the debate tonight and other stuff in the race, a return visit from political science professor, Dr. and Professor Tess Marchant Shapiro at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. She's been on with us before. Professor, it's Paul again at WICC. How are you?
I'm great. We're playing on popcorn here.
Is that what it's going to be? Is that what it's going to be? Will there be anything to dull the pain, Professor, if it gets ridiculous?
I think shots would be dangerous myself.
It's really funny and sad at the same time that, you know, all these outlets, tongue-in-cheek and seriously, they're all publishing like these drinking games. But, I don't know, and I've been on top of this for a couple of years now. Isn't this odd? Number one, Professor, we're having this so early in the race, and there's all kind of conjecture on that. And number two, we have, two people that according to like 60, 65, 70% of the people polled, they'd really rather see a different set of candidates going, wouldn't they?
They would. And I guess that's why the debate so early is to try and reinvigorate it, get people maybe more engaged than they are.
The engagement, is that something you can force on people, or do they have to naturally be drawn into this? And do you think they are? Now, they are, projecting a record viewership tonight.
Yeah, it is something that naturally brings the viewers. And I suppose that how well this debate goes will determine how many viewers there will be on the future debates. And I suppose whether there will be future debates.
Yeah, and I guess we're supposed to have one in September. Do you really think, though, Professor, that this matters? Now, they're saying it. All the experts say, well, this will be unlike any other one before. But we hear that a lot. Do you think there is still a significant amount of people who are legitimately undecided here? Or are they looking for somebody to screw up more than actually put in a good performance?
Well, I mean, it both depends on who you're talking to.
Yeah.
There are certainly the confirmed Democrats and the confirmed Republicans that whatever happens will reinforce their views. But there are a lot of independents that I think will make a huge difference for, at least traditionally it always has. And this year, I think there really are a lot of people that are trying to figure out what to do. Whether to go for one of these candidates who they're not particularly happy with, whether to go with RFK, thinking maybe that might be better. But for those voters, I think will make a huge difference.
Are you surprised, Professor, that I know you're probably seeing the same things I am, and in that people are forecasting maybe an undervote here. In other words, people going to the polling places and maybe voting for their member of Congress or their Senate member, but just not wanting to vote in this race, or maybe using, as you mentioned, RFK Jr. as sort of a protest vote.
That certainly could happen, but that's the whole point of the debate, isn't it? To try and convince those people who are unhappy that what they're remembering isn't reality. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff going on the waves talking about how old both of the candidates are, mm-hmm. and a lot of it has been based on, inaccurate videos, stuff that's been manipulated. And so I think seeing both of them tonight will remind people who both of them really are.
Our guest is Dr. Tess Marchant Shapiro, professor of political science at Southern Connecticut State University. Professor, I've always noticed that one of your areas of study and concentration is mass political behavior. How are the masses behaving politically currently in the U.S.? Give us a broad look at that mass behavior. What do you think?
Oh, wow. So there's been a lot of disengagement. I think politicians on both sides have sort of taken the gloves off and behaved in ways that traditionally they didn't in terms of civility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has a lot of people really disillusioned with politics. And so that's, I think, where the disengagement potentially comes from. Again, if the debate really is the kind of debate that the CNN is trying to make it into, it could remind people of the importance of politics and how who they vote for really does make a difference.
Are there too many numbers out there? I love numbers, and I tell people, listen, a political poll is like the fifth inning score of a nine-inning baseball game. Take it for what it is. It's interesting. Crunch down the numbers, but the game isn't over yet. But we're constantly deluged, Professor, by a lot of these pollsters, you know, many of whom are really good, and we see breakdowns of African-American voters and women voters and blue-collar and white-collar. Do you think the public kind of, does that make eyes glaze over? You know what I mean? Or is it just like the number guys and gals are out there and it's just an effort to try and understand what the heck is going on?
So that's, I had a student actually working on a thesis this year.
Really?
Looking at presidential polling in the past. And the trick is, like you said, it's an ongoing thing. You can't poll for election day a month in advance because there's stuff that's going to happen between a month in advance and election day. It's things, opinion changes, and so the poll will never be perfectly accurate unless somehow you have a really boring election and we know exactly what the candidates are, and that just doesn't happen. One of the things this year I've noticed particularly much is because it's so close, the pollsters will always say, oh, it's within the margin of error, and they'll say, but so-and-so is ahead.
Yeah.
Like, well, if it's in the margin of error, then we really don't know that so-and-so is ahead.
I love asking this of folks who are in the education field, especially on college campuses, all the experts I have on. What are you hearing from people around you, and especially maybe from some of your students or the students that you come in contact with? Are they excited? Are they captivated? Are they disgusted? Are they just watching something on Netflix to make them forget about all this? What have you been hearing there at Southern?
Oh, that's funny. I hadn't even thought about what the students are saying. It's really too early. Yeah. They haven't been talking about it at all. So, yeah, like you were saying, it's too early. Usually they get more engaged come mm-hmm. October. They'll start really getting involved. I'll be teaching an election class this fall, and I'm sure the students in there will already be engaged and paying attention. But by and large, I don't think most people pay that much attention, which actually makes it surprising that the expectation is that it'll be a record high tonight.
Yeah, and is it surprising then that they're doing this on such an early day? You know, I was talking to somebody here at the station the other day. They said, well, this is really early. I said, yeah, we're used to seeing, you know, three presidential debates and one vice presidential debates starting, you know, late September into October, then election day. Do you buy, Professor, at all into the theory that if Mr. Biden does not do particularly well tonight and Mr. Trump's numbers bounce off of this, even a little higher, that the president may be pushed to drop out of the race? And how would that even work? Do we have any idea how that might work?
Oh, wow. I mean, it's happening early because the convention is not going to be particularly meaningful. We already know who the candidates are. That's why it's never happened this year. That it makes sense to try and liven the debate up with, or the campaign up with the debate right now. Mm-hmm. But in terms of either one of them dropping out, I don't see it. There's always someone who does poorly on the first debate, and then there's a battle back in the second debate.
Let me ask you one final thing here. No matter who wins this election, Professor, be it Joe Biden, be it Donald Trump, once that upcoming term is over, either four more years of Mr. Trump or four more years of President Biden, what happens to the American political landscape here? Is there going to be a little maybe self-correction, a younger, more youthful wave of leaders? What happens post-Biden, post-Trump, do you think, down the road?
Well, I mean, if Bush, yeah, either one who wins, then it'll be their last term, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there has to be a younger correction. Although, you know, is Kamala Harris that young? I don't, I mean, not particularly, but the candidate that loses, well, Biden wouldn't run again. Trump, I assume, if he loses, probably would run again, right?
Wow. You think so? An 82-year-old run by Donald Trump? Wouldn't that be something, huh?
Oh, I bet he would. Don't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, he, you know, he's probably not going to ride off into the sunset, do you think, Professor, or not? I'm not buying that.
There's no way. There is no way. He's too invested in this.
Yeah, absolutely. The guest has been Professor Tess Marchand Shapiro. Dr. Shapiro is a professor in political science, Department of Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. Professor, thank you. Enjoy the debate tonight, and we'll talk down the road. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's think about that. Does that mean Donald Trump just waltzes off into the sunset if he loses? Wow. I don't know. Is this one going to be bigger than Ollie Frazier 1, Ollie Frazier 2, Ollie Frazier 3, The Rumble in the Jungle, The Thrilla in Manila? Is that what we're going to have tonight? Some people are saying we could see Super Bowl-level viewership. Of course, the first of two scheduled debates between President Joe Biden and his challenger, the guy who held the office before Mr. Biden, former President Donald Trump. You know, a lot of people say debates don't make a real difference if both candidates land a few blows and they wink at each other and everyone walks off into the sunset. But before we talk to our go-to guy on this sort of stuff, Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University, there have been at least a couple of times in history since these debates started in earnest with the 1960 race where candidates have hurt themselves. Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter debating in 1976, and Gerald Ford saying this in response to a question about Soviet domination in Europe.
There is no Soviet domination of Eastern Europe, and there never will be under a Ford administration.
I'm sorry, could I just follow? Did I understand you to say, sir, that the Russians are not using Eastern Europe as their own sphere of influence and occupying most of the countries there and making sure with their troops that it's a communist zone, whereas on our side of the line, the Italians and the French are still flirting with
possibility? I don't believe, Mr. Frankel, that the Yugoslavians consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. I don't believe that the Romanians consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. I don't believe that the Poles consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union.
Now, the cleanup on aisle three after that was people with Mr. Ford saying, well, he didn't mean it literally. He meant it in spirit, but the damage was done. On the humorous side, there was this question and this answer as Ronald Reagan debated Walter Mondale in 1984.
I want to raise an issue that I think has been lurking out there for two or three weeks and cast it specifically in national security terms. You already are the oldest president in history, and some of your staff say you were tired after your most recent encounter with Mr. Mondale. I recall yet that President Kennedy had to go for days on end with very little sleep during the Cuba Missile Crisis. Is there any doubt in your mind that you would be able to function in such circumstances?
Not at all, Mr. Truitt, and I want you to know that also I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit, for political purposes, my opponent's youth and inexperience.
Only Ronald Reagan could turn a presidential debate into a sitcom routine. Dr. Gary Rose is with us, scholar in residence at Sacred Heart University. Gary, that was certainly a memorable moment. I remember that.
Oh, that was classic. I just laughed to myself when I heard that again.
Well, and it's because, yeah, as I guess as was told, listen, Reagan was Reagan with his acting background, and they told him, hey, you're going to get asked about your age. And
yep,
he had it ready. He had the line ready.
Oh, he was absolutely ready for that. I don't know if it was rehearsed, but nevertheless, it was a tremendous response to that question. And as you were prefacing this discussion, it certainly did help him with the debate. Although I will say that, you know, that election nevertheless was a foregone conclusion anyway.
Yeah. Gary, we've been doing this head on since about 1960. And boy, when Nixon and Kennedy got together in that studio with Kennedy looking great, taking makeup beforehand, and Nixon with the 5 o'clock shadow and sweating, he had just gotten out of the hospital. Substantively, that was a pretty good debate. People say if you listened, Nixon won, but just the image of JFK, you know, in a lot of people's minds gave him the win, but a lot of people don't realize before 1960, this really didn't happen at all, did it?
No, we didn't have debates. And you're right. Imagery was so important in that 1960 debate. And it's in all the textbooks, just what you cited, that, you know, Kennedy's image really prevailed among those who watched the debate, but those who listened to debate felt that Nixon was actually more substantive. So it really does show the power of television and media, you know, when it comes to perceptions of presidential candidates. Sure.
Yeah, and Gary, that was, you know, when you look back and you watch that, and I urge young people to watch it, it's all over YouTube. Thankfully, you can pull up this great stuff. That was, as opposed to what we may hear tonight, and we'll get to that in a second, that was some pretty heady stuff about foreign influence and who's controlling these islands and the communist threat. And America's really riveted that night, weren't they?
Oh, they were. That was major stuff. Yeah. And the missile gap. Yeah, that was a those were very intense times. And, you know, the Cold War. You know, democracy versus communism, and it really, really mattered to a lot of voters who was nominated by the two parties on that issue alone.
Gary, sure. What's your thinking, especially going into tonight? Do you win debates or do you lose them? Like a lot of people cite that Gerald Ford clip I played, and the cleanup after that was, well, of course, the president knows the Soviets dominate Eastern Europe, and of course he did, but boy, he did a little bit of a sloppy job trying to talk up the backbone and the spirit of Eastern Europeans. I guess that's the classic example of really hurting yourself, huh?
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that. You do tend to lose debates. You don't win them. And you can have a terrible gaffe, as you mentioned with Gerald Ford. And it was a gaffe. And whether that cost him the election, that's hard to say. Some say more it was, you know, the pardon of Nixon that really made a difference in that election. But nevertheless, that gaffe about Eastern Europe, that there was no Soviet domination. I remember watching that debate myself.
And you went,
what did you just say? Yeah, I know.
Did I hear what I just heard? Yeah.
I know. Right.
Yeah. What do you expect tonight, Gary, between Mr. Biden and Mr. Trump? I guess the big question is, which Mr. Trump are we going to see?
Yeah, and from what I understand, the 16 advisors that are working with President Biden, you know, are actually prepping him for two different versions of Trump because we don't really know what's coming. Is it going to be a substantive discussion, or is Trump going to be unhinged as he was in the first debate they had? You know, and so it's difficult to say what's coming, but I will say that. This is going to be, as you mentioned, too, in your prefatory comments there, this is going to be like the Super Bowl. So many people are going to be watching this. But I think the question comes down to whether or not this debate is going to alter the outcome of the election. Because what are we talking about now, Paul? We're talking about six swing states.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah. And within those swing states, how many thousand people are we really talking about that are going to really be influenced by this debate? Just a fraction of the population. But nevertheless, that could really alter, I think, the outcome. I think this debate actually could determine the outcome of this election. I really do. But it's not going to be as if it's massive nationwide movement of people. It's going to be the movement of a very small number of undecided voters in about six states. I think that's really what's going to happen.
Dr. Gary Rose is the guest, Sacred Heart University, as usual. Gary, do you think maybe a lot of people just want to see, maybe beyond the substance here, they know how Trump's going to come out. I mean, this is a guy who at now, 78 years old, can, in a jacket and tie, talk for 2 hours in 100-degree heat and then go have three Diet Cokes and a cheeseburger, and he's fine. A lot of people, I think, want to just hear and see and watch Joe Biden for an hour of change, you think, just to make an assessment?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the big question. You know, can Joe Biden withstand the pressure of a debate standing up there for, you know, such a long time? He'll probably have notes, but and I hope to God he doesn't have the questions fed to him, as, you know, there was that accusation 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, I think that's what so many people are interested in seeing. Most people are, you know, are probably aware of the way Trump is going to conduct himself.
Yeah.
But how Biden is going to withstand the amount of time up there without, you know, his prepackaged presentations, as he always has, I think that's going to be what's really going to be intriguing tonight, is to see how the president can hold up during this debate physically and mentally.
Yeah, and again, Gary, I always say when I discuss that, there's nothing wrong with getting old. We're all getting there, hopefully, you know, later than sooner. But the pressures of the office, physically and mentally, you know, I listen, in some way, I give credit to Mr. Biden for, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but still standing with the pressure and with the constant mental and physical pressure that has, I mean, look at what it did to President Obama, the gray hair it gave him, and he's a much younger guy.
Oh, it's such a pressure-packed position to have. Foreign policy, domestic policy, interest groups, lobbyists, so much pressure. Congress, you know, opponents, friends. I mean, it's just an extraordinary position for someone to have, let alone, as you make note, somebody who is the age of Joe Biden. It really is quite extraordinary to see this.
And every minute of your day, Gary, is mapped out. I mean, literally every – you just can't say, no, I'm done. I'm going to go watch Netflix. No, you can't. You can't do that.
You know, the
pressure there.
I know. The one thing I kind of wonder a little bit about, I often hear, you know, his press secretary, you know, say that, you know, and behind the scenes, President Biden is just a ball of energy and it's so hard to keep up with him. But then visually, you just don't see that.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering what we're going to see tonight. You know, are we going to see what his staff people are describing, you know, in the adjectives, the wonderful adjectives they have about him? Or are we going to observe what we have all been observing, you know, during newscasts? And so I think that's going to be fascinating to see what kind of energy are we going to see from this man. And if he does come across as he did with the State of the Union address, then I think he's going to really be perceived as the winner of tonight's debate.
Yeah. Finally, Gary, we still don't know, although Mr. Trump says he'll be there tonight, who the vice presidential pick might be.
Yeah.
You know, everybody says it's basically down to Doug Burgum or Marco Rubio or J.D. Vance. You know, Gary, people said to me here at the station, who do you think? I said, well, you know, if he goes with Rubio, you know, J.D. Vance is young. He's got a great resume, ex-military, Harvard, Yale, all that.
Yeah.
Burgum, you know, I'm still wondering what that brings. But if he goes with Marco Rubio, that would be quite interesting for the Hispanic factor.
Yeah, it would be. Although, you know, I was asked that a while back. I was talking to a student of mine, and the thing with Rubio, though, is first of all, he's from Florida.
Yeah.
And so that state's in the bag, I think, for Trump anyway. I'm not sure that's going to be a swing state. And furthermore, you know, they talk about Rubio broadening, you know, the Trump's reach to the Hispanic, but Rubio is a Cuban American. And what I think a lot of people don't really understand is that the Hispanic population in the U.S. is not monolithic.
Yeah.
And Cuban Americans are always considered to be quite different than, say, Mexican Americans and Puerto Ricans. And
much
so
more
forth.
Conservative.
And, much more conservative.
Yeah.
And so whether or not Marco Rubio can actually broaden that dimension of, you know, the coalition, I have some questions about that. I really do.
And one thing, Gary, just to wrap up, somebody said maybe the biggest factor that Marco Rubio can bring is one of the most obvious. He would be able to do campaign appearances if he wanted to completely in Spanish. They could send him and say, don't speak a word of English. Say whatever you want. And no, seriously. And that could draw some people's attention.
Yeah, I think he could. You know, one thing that I know the Democrats will pounce on, if in fact he's named, is getting back to Little Marco.
Little Marco.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to come back to haunt, you know, to haunt him. I know it will. They won't let people forget that.
Oh, no, no. It's what all those consultants get paid for. Sacred Heart University political science professor, scholar in residence, Dr. Gary Rose, as always. Gary, what are your, do you have a favorite snack and or an alcoholic beverage tonight? What is your, will you be taking shots every time he says convicted felon or not? No?
Sauvignon Blanc tonight.
Nice, nice. And some Fritos, some corn chips. What do we got? Popcorn? There we go. Nice.
Right.
Gary, take care. We'll talk down the road. Thank you,
all
sir.
All right. Okay,
all right.
Bye-bye.
How about that? Gary's a wine guy. I have a little Sauvignon Blanc. How about that? Yeah. You people who are wine people, what goes with a debate? Like, I know, you know, like white wine with fish and with chicken, a hearty red with beef. What wine goes with a debate? You tell me. He's back with us at this time every Thursday afternoon right here on the Fabulous Connecticut Today program from the Fabulous blog, onlyinbridgeport.com. Lenny Grimaldi is with us. Mr. Grimaldi, how are you, sir?
Cha-cha boom, Uncle Paulie. Big night.
Big night. We'll get to
here's the drink. Here's the drink of choice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Drink and snacks at the Grimaldi Estate.
It's
what are we doing?
It's Zinfandel, red grape.
All right, all right, all right. You're a wine guy. All right. Yeah.
Yes, you're going to watch politicians debate, sip some Zin and cause some sin. And. Right?
Yeah.
And lots of salty anchovies.
I know you're
gagging. I know you're going to hurl.
Oh,
you're about
to
throw up. You got to man up, Uncle Paulie.
No.
Anchovies for the night.
No. No. Now, the thing is, now I never ate them, but at my father's store on Washington Avenue and Liberty Street in New Haven, when I would go in there after school and then to work on the weekends during the holidays, yes, I would have to. We'd have customers. Now you and I know our tribe, you know, Americans say anchovies. What do we say? Aleech, right? That's right. Paul, give me a half pound of aleech. I was like, oh, I had to open the can, and I had to get the knife, cut them out, right? Do you like them with the salt all over them, Lenny? Is that what we're looking at here?
Sometimes. You haven't seen them in the barrels, right?
Yeah.
They're in barrels of salt. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You just get high off the fumes. So politicians are salty human beings.
Yeah.
Well, it's something that complement that. So you got to have,
all right,
a little zin and a little sin.
All right, a little zin and sin. Now, before we get to the meat here,
okay.
All right, the aleech, we got the protein, some meat there. We got some liquid refreshment. Any carbohydrates? Nice piece of Italian bread? What are we doing? Pizza? What else? What do we got?
Oh, that's a good one, right?
Yeah, you need some carbs, Vinny. I mean, Lenny, whatever the hell your name is.
Rigatoni bolognese.
Ah, there we go. All right, Lenny, what do we got here? You said we have an oops endorsement. explain an oops endorsement for the state Senate. What's going on here?
One day you're up, the next day you're down.
Yeah? So, what do we got?
Well, this is an intriguing story. It's one of those inside baseball stories, which I like on only in Bridgeport. So, 2023 candidate for mayor, Lamon Daniels, was supported by Scott Burns.
Okay.
And Scott Burns is a candidate for state Senate in the 22nd senatorial, which is the trifecta town of Bridgeport, Trumbull, Monroe.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So Lamon Daniels was a co-host of a fundraiser for Scott Burns. He kind of wanted to, you supported me, I supported you. I'll co-host a fundraiser.
Sure.
And I guess Burns' campaign thought, that represented a clear and distinct stamped endorsement. And so the Burns campaign kicked out a press release, which I ran, that, Lamon Daniels is backing Scott Burns for state Senate. Then I get a phone call after 9 o'clock last night, the story up, from Lamon Daniels. Lenny, I don't think so. I like Scott Burns. He's my friend, but the bottom line is Lamon Daniels said, questioned the endorsement. He did not approve it. He likes Scott Burns, co-hosted an endorsement for him, but he's got other friends in the race. So Lamon Daniels did work for the mayoral administration of Bill Finch, who's one of the candidates.
Yeah.
In this race. It's a four-person race.
Uh-huh.
You've got Burns and Finch and Tyler Mack.
Yep.
And Sujata Wilcox, who's a law school professor at Quinnipiac.
Yep.
Trumbull Bay. So this is an interesting battle because, we're getting into the season. We're so close now to July 1, right? And then things kind of slow down next week. But then they're going to tick back up. And qualifying for that public money where they get juiced by $110,000 is going to be so important. I'm predicting that Sujata is going to be the first. She's the first to file. No one else to file.
Okay.
Unless there's some issues with her filing that the State Elections Enforcement Commission has some questions on, she's probably going to be qualified, if not next week, the week after. And I think she's going to be several weeks ahead of anyone else who qualifies. Finch could probably be second. I think he's getting really close there. Do the other two qualify? Scott Burns and Tyler Mack. That's going to be a huge deal if they can. If they can't, it's going to be really hard.
So the question here that would come as you tell me this, Lenny, and as I'm reading this, if Daniels said that, hey, I'm not backing Scott Burns, but there was a release. Who wrote the release? I mean, what was this?
Oh, the Burns campaign. Yeah, the Burns campaign.
Ah, okay.
So they just took. So Lamont, talking to Lamont, he said, listen, they took a lot of latitude.
All right. Yeah.
So yeah, they just kicked out the release. So Lamont Daniels and his rejoinder, which was, I saw that release. Let me do a clarification.
Sure. Yeah.
Like Scott Burns, but I have not officially endorsed him because I have other friends in the race, like Tyler Mack, and he worked for Bill Finch too. So I think that's what it's down. But it's one of those like head shakers.
Okay, Barnum Festival, big weekend for them. What's on tap for that?
Friday night tomorrow, 7 p.m. Seaside Park, Barnum Dyke. No stickers to get in the park, so anyone can get in.
Okay,
all right. So no stickers required, and that's going to be the fireworks. Champions on Parade is going to be at Shelton High School.
Mm.
So gates open at 5 p.m. on Saturday. Show starts at 6. And then we have on Sunday, the great street parade, which is going to be 11 o'clock. They've gone back to the old route, which is kind of nice, at the corner of Park and Capitol. And, you've got an intriguing Barnum Festival ringmaster, Dr. Camilla Lawrence, who works for the Hartford Healthcare, first woman of color to be the ringmaster. And she's done a really remarkable job being very, very present many, many days. And she's been a great face of the festival, trying to add diversity, to this, institutional annual event in Bridgeport that also brings in suburbanites. So it looks like it's going to be shaping up as a fun weekend.
Yeah, I had her on the show when she first was appointed, a lovely woman. I think, Lenny, there's something going on tonight, starting, I think, at 9 with the president and your old boss. Now, it's interesting, Lenny, you and I have obviously been reading the same stuff. What Trump are we going to see tonight? Will he be a little lighter? Will there be some levity because he's leading in the swing states, or is it going to be, he's going to drop the hammer no matter what because the base wants? What do you think we're going to see tonight?
I don't really think it's about which Trump shows up. I think it's about Biden.
Okay.
The first 15 minutes, I think, are going to be crucial for Biden. If he shows up and he's Jalopy Joe, that's going to be bad.
Jalopy.
If he shows up, Lunchbox Joe, Lunchbox Vigor Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
And has a very strong presence, a vigorous presence. I think that's all he needs. That's really more important. The thing about Trump is, which one is he going to show up? It doesn't really matter for my former boss, right? Mm. I think it's more important for Biden in that first 15 minutes. If he settles in, he draws a really nice, crisp contrast, to the former president, I think Biden's going to be okay. If he comes out, looking a little bit like the things that Trump has said about him, although the Trump, operatives have really lowered the bar. For him. They've been saying the last couple of weeks, oh my God, we can't win this debate against him. seasoned Joe Biden. Right?
But there's a method to that madness. We all know what that is. Like, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And so, yes, I do think there's going to be, will it be record-breaking people watching? Like, the first 15 minutes are going to be really, really crucial. Plus, again, we still live in a world. What's going to be parsed afterwards? So you're still going to have operatives on both sides trying to grab the pieces that they can put in social media and spin it out. I think internationally, I would probably the viewership could be off the charts.
Yeah.
Right. So because there's so many other countries are like zoned in, on what's going to happen in this very close race. Will it really change anything? I'm not sure. I do think if Biden really comes across well in the first 15 minutes, it's going to be good night. If he doesn't, it could be a very different story. And then my former boss will do what he does. So I really think it's more about Biden than Trump tonight.
And I really think, Lenny, I really like the fact that, A, there's going to be no audience. Now, I know people say, well, that's tough for Trump, but I think he could use that to his advantage because he doesn't have to worry about people cheering for Biden. And I got to tell you, Lenny, I really like the fact that, and I hope they don't try and yell to each other, the fact that the microphones are both going to be muted. They'll be turned off for the time that the other guy is answering a question. I think that's, and I've anchored radio debates before, and that's the way we generally do. That's the proper way to do it. I think, and that's going to be good.
Yeah, I think it's set up for a traditional, long ago kind of debate.
Yeah.
Where you do have adults in the room. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I do think at some point Trump is going to say, I don't have one opponent. I don't have two opponents. I have three opponents, right? Because it's a CNN, centered place. And I think at some point, if he doesn't like the line of questioning, if he doesn't like the way he's being reeled in or being, focused, say you got to focus on the task here and the rules, I think you could see him like just really freelancing. I got three opponents tonight, not one.
Yeah, I mean, what's to stop him from saying, well, I know you just asked about this, but when are you going to ask about this? Yeah, well, what's to stop him from doing that?
No, I think he's going to push it as far as he can push it.
No.
Yeah, he's going to push it really, really far, and they'll see, how disciplined the CNN moderators, and they're really, really good.
Yeah.
See how disciplined they're going to stay on top of him. And see how far out he wants to push it.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the drama, the fun of he's never been in this setting.
Yeah,
so kind of programmed and so very specific. He's always had a lot of latitude to roam around, which he likes. He likes that. He likes that free ranging, flame throwing.
Yeah.
Opportunity, and he's also good at projecting insults.
Yeah. Well, he was talking about how expensive bacon was the other day. That's another thing too. Is he going to talk about the price?
Yeah, maybe he'll rub it on his chest tonight.
The
I don't
price
know.
Of bacon. Lenny, listen. Yeah. Enjoy the pasta bolognese tonight, the alici on the side, and a little wine, and you're all set there, my friend. Okay.
I'm going to have a good time.
All right, Lenny. Thanks. Talk to you next week, Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com with his pasta, his vino, and alici.